Welcome to the Stand Up for Migrants podcast from the UN Human Rights Office. On this show, we bring you inspiring projects that help change the narrative on migration towards one of hope, inclusion, and a larger us. José Antonio Vargas is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Emmy-nominated filmmaker, and Tony-nominated producer. A leading voice for the human rights of migrants, he founded Define American, an organization that focuses on narrative change. To kick off our podcast series, we thought José would be the perfect person to explain what narrative change is and why we, as advocates for human rights, need to integrate it into everything we do. And I'm your host, Christina McGilvery. Welcome to the Stand Up for Migrants podcast.
Hey.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Human Rights Podcast. I'm really excited to hear more about your work and to talk about narrative change. I think if we can just start out, can you tell me a little bit more about your own story?
Yeah. So I was born in the Philippines. And then one morning when I was 12, my mom woke me up and my suitcase was already packed. She had already packed it. Mm-hmm. And she said there was a cab waiting outside and I was going to America.
So, wow. So that was the first that you heard.
Well, my grandparents, my mom's parents had been in America for like as long as I could remember. So America was always like a part of our consciousness, given that my grandparents supported us. So I got up, my suitcase was packed. My mom said I was going to America. She introduced me to this guy at the airport who she said was my uncle, but I'm Filipino, so everybody's an uncle.
Yeah.
Then I landed in California, in Los Angeles. And then I thought I was in America. Well, actually, when I got to the airport, I thought I was in the wrong country because I did not see Oprah, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, and Baywatch. Like, I thought America was like Baywatch and, you know, Oprah, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston. And then I get to the airport in LA and it was people who looked like me and people who looked like something else. Mm. I didn't know what Mexicans were or Latinos were. So I thought it was the wrong country.
Your idea of what America was so projected from cultural TV representations.
Television and film. And then fast forward to 4 years after I arrived, I tried to get a driver's license like any 16-year-old in America. And then that's when I found out that I was here illegally because I showed my green card to the driver's license woman, the clerk at the DMV, and then she said it was fake. Yeah. And then this was in 1997. Mm-hmm. So pre-Google, pre-internet, right? But in Silicon Valley. Right. I grew up in Mountain View, which is like literally the headquarters of LinkedIn and Google. But what was interesting at that time was whenever anybody said anything about fake papers or illegal people or illegal aliens, which is actually the term at the time, it was always about Latin people, specifically Mexican. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that because my name is José Antonio Vargas, I was like, yo, I'm Filipino. We were colonized. I'm actually Asian. Like, I'm not Mexican. So I already had, as a 16-year-old immigrant kid from the Philippines, internalized this narrative that mm-hmm. this issue was all about Mexico and Mexicans, and did not know anything about the history of how California got to be part of the United States, that California actually used to be owned by Mexico, right? Like, all of these things that to me, text without context is right. And so, so that's how I found out.
Well, and it's so interesting because it shows again, another incident in your own life where that power of narrative basically shaped how you thought about things, that it was such a surprise that you could be undocumented.
Yeah, it was the dominant narrative. It was the dominant narrative.
So tell me more about what narratives are and what role narrative change plays in Define American's vision.
A narrative is a system in which you understand the world. Mm. There are many, we need many, many stories, right, to help shift the narrative. Our strategy has been, how do we help writers, producers, directors better tell more authentic, more accurate stories of immigrants and migrants. So far in the 5 years that we've had this entertainment media division at Define American, this pillar, which has been our flagship really program, we've consulted on like 120 shows across 23 networks, Netflix, Amazon, CBS, ABC. We practically work with everybody, right? And we work on specific shows. So that means, for example, reviewing scripts, right? Making suggestions for characters. Mm. That means visiting sets when we were allowed to visit sets, you know, pre-COVID. So we have become kind of the influencing, the influencer sources for storytellers who want to tell the story of immigrants in America, right? At this specific time. If we made this quote unquote issue about values, which we all have in common.
Yeah.
Right. And when we talk about immigration as an issue, that's I would argue that immigration in the age of climate change, right? In the age of globalization and this Amazon world we're living in, migration is the defining issue of the 21st century. Mm. And this is such a big quote unquote issue, or what some people would call a problem, that our part of it, our piece of it, is the narrative part, right? Our piece of it is how do we impact how immigrants are seen and perceived? And that perception impacts and shapes public policy.
Yeah.
You know, so for us, relying simply on changing policies and changing laws without impacting the way people perceive migrants and immigrants as people, the culture for us is the water we swim in. It's the oxygen we breathe, right? So that has to be a part of your calculation as you do this work. So our job at Define American is to look at the person holistically. The person that watches YouTube video and looks at TikTok videos, the person that, you know, watches, you know, the latest thing on Netflix, and the person that reads either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, right? Mm-hmm. Or their local newspaper, or listening to their radio, or like the radio that they listen to before they go to work or while they're at work.
Yeah.
So our job is, how do we intervene? How do we correct? How do we humanize? Right. Mm-hmm. So that has been our job for the past 10 years is, and mind you, this is in many ways in the immigration issue, fertile ground and in many ways, virgin territory.
When we think about changing the narrative on something with migration, in some ways, what you're looking at doing with Define American is looking at those many fractured audiences, those many people consuming media across different outlets, mainstream media, social media, journalism, you know, and within those, they all have different avenues. But understanding what that audience is and then trying to meet them where they are.
Yep. This is where I think being really intentional about audience is something that's for us. One of our core values is, who is our audience for this specific strategy? What we've landed in at Define American is, how do we influence the influencers in all of these media spaces? So let's get really specific. So I mentioned LGBTQ issues, right? For me, Ellen DeGeneres on the cover of Time, 2 years later, Will and Grace was the number one show on television.
Yeah.
So this gay man with a straight roommate. And for me, what was interesting about that was, for every Will, there was a Grace.
Yeah.
So for every gay person or lesbian or trans, there's the straight ally.
Yeah. Right,
who is advocating for the full and equal rights of their trans, gay, lesbian, bisexual, right?
Yeah.
So that model for us was really, really interesting. And Will and Grace was the number one show on television. If you think about the trajectory of the LGBTQ movement, specifically the same-sex marriage movement, right? We saw the cultural shift happen first. Mm. The conversation was about values. It was about love. It was about family. Yeah. It was, right? It wasn't about, you know, let's go past this. That I think is something that, how do we talk about migrants and immigrants as human beings coming from families, doing what families do, which is supporting each other, right? And taking care of each other.
It's so interesting what you said, the lessons of how shows like Will and Grace influenced the narrative in the United States and abroad of seeing humanizing individual characters and speaking to values for audiences, and how you've been able to carry that forward with the migration narrative here. If we create human connection,
value systems,
if we create value systems, that is a great way of bringing more people in.
When we first started doing the consulting on TV shows, right, we would meet with writers, showrunners who had no idea that people, you know, couldn't just, you know, quickly adjust their status, right? Yeah. Like, so our relationship with Superstore, which is the show on NBC, right? That was like a mainstream comedy, right? It was a workplace comedy, right? Which America Ferrera, the wonderful actress America Ferrera, was one of the leading stars. We got introduced with that show because we found out that they created a character, undocumented gay Filipino.
Where did they get that idea?
So apparently they were inspired by my story. So we contacted them. They're like, oh my God, we'd love to talk to you all. And they told us that they were going to introduce this character as undocumented. And then they were planning to legalize the character's status maybe by the end of the season.
Yeah.
One of our first reaction was, wait, how are you going to do that? Like, how are you just going to automatically, right? There's why there's 11 million undocumented people in this country, right?
Yeah.
And so we actually created this big graphic for them about the game of getting legal, just explaining how immigration is not a one-size-fits-all system and how people can't just magically
become
legal. So out of that relationships in 2016 came our actually most consistent, we worked on them on 23 episodes on the storyline of a character named Mateo, right? Mm-hmm. Over like 3 years. You know, this is really important because also what we do at Define American is we're very research driven. So we actually have a research department, right? Mm-hmm. Headed by Sarah Lowe. And what we do is we don't want to make any assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. And what we've learned in our research is the more viewers are exposed to an immigrant character, mm-hmm. at a longer period of time, the more they develop like a parasocial relationship with that character, and likely for them to advocate on that character's behalf, contact their elected members, and feel that they're connected to somebody whose experience is not theirs.
Yeah.
So that was interesting for us because it isn't just a one-off, oh, here's a movie. That's why, for example, out of the 120 consulting work that we've done in Hollywood, the majority of that has been on TV shows because we found that, you know, because TV is all about, one of my favorite directors is a guy named George C. Wolfe. I'm a big theater buff. He directed like Angels in America.
Yeah.
And I went to a lecture he gave in New York when I used to live in New York. And he said, this is really interesting. He said, movies are about stories. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm-hmm. Television is about characters.
That's interesting. Movies are about stories.
Beginning, middle, and end. Television is about characters. That's why there's how many seasons of Grey's Anatomy? We've been following Grey.
Decade.
You know, like, what? Sick, right? Frasier was my dude for like 8 seasons, right?
Yeah.
And theater is for ideas. Movies are for stories. Television is for character. Theater is for ideas. Now, mind you, of course, that all like, blur, you know, especially now things are getting more, even more blurry because of the streaming platforms. But I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at how different mediums cater to different kinds of storytelling.
I want to ask you a bit about how to identify those shared values. There's some that seem very intuitive, family, friendship, love, things like that. These are all things we share. Oftentimes at UN Human Rights, how we think about it is trying to map out what do we know about our values, right? The values that we share and we want to uphold. Then identifying who your audience is and mapping out what are your audience's values. And if we can almost think of it as a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
A Venn diagram being those two circles that overlap and looking at what are the places that we can find values in common and how do we speak to those values? I know at Define American, you guys also have a large research element like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me a bit about how you identify what those values are and speak to them?
Well, a lot of it to me is actually, so we just released a study, if you go to our website, called American Dreaming. Mm-hmm. It's a study, actually, we interviewed 40 storytellers. Mm-hmm. So people, the activists who've been doing this work for many, many years, and what the cost has been like to tell their story.
Mm.
Right? Like, how is it re-traumatizing? Is it like, how has that been? Mm. And somebody described being undocumented in America as like having 1,000 bulls raging at you.
Wow.
And then the value system, I mean, the dominant value that we got out of this study, which is a really deep research that our researcher, Sarah Lowe, conducted over 2 years, actually, was resilience.
Mm.
And here's the interesting thing about it. Resilience over time was built by having a community.
Yeah.
So as undocumented people in this country, they're part of a community, and that community system, that value of having a community, really in many ways increased their resilience.
Yeah.
To dig even deeper in your question, I would argue that part of why the immigrant rights movement in the United States hasn't progressed at the level that it should, mm-hmm. is clearly, of course, the politics is just stalled, stuck, all of that, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think we've been having a value-based conversation.
Mm.
I think we've been having an issue-based conversation. We've been playing right into the partisan politics. We've been playing right into the ping pong of all of this politically. We haven't said this is about families. We keep seeing it as a political paradigm, and we're not seeing it as a moral paradigm.
Now, I'm wondering for our listeners, if there's one way they can incorporate some of the things we've discussed today, mm-hmm. about the role that values play in narrative shifts in their own everyday lives. Do you have any advice?
Well, first of all, I think even before getting to the values-based conversation, is understanding that narrative, the role of narrative on this issue, is actually not a slice of that pie. Mm-hmm. I would argue it's the pan, right? I would argue it's like the irrigation system.
Yeah.
You know, it's under the house.
Yeah.
And we can't go build a house that is safe and welcoming for migrants and immigrants if we don't fix the irrigation system and make sure that the foundation, right, is built on the human condition.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. Like that for me is seeing narrative change as a part of your work, mm-hmm. whether or not that's the language you use. I think it's just the awakening that I'm hoping, you know, all of us try to understand and integrate into our work, whatever it may be.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And please check out defineamerican.com and follow us on social media.
Do you have an inspiring project or story to share that helps change the narrative on migration? We would love to hear from you on Facebook or Twitter. To learn more about some of the strategies we discussed in today's podcast, you can consult our online toolbox on narrative change on migration. The Stand Up for Migrants podcast is produced by the UN Human Rights Office.